We dig up their bones, but these dinosaurs leave Christians with many questions. Are dinosaurs in the Bible? Do you want to understand the Bible, but you're confused? You've come to the right place. This is Tough Bible Questions on Timothy Talks, where I'm going to work through answers to your questions about the tough, challenging, and sometimes flat-out weird sections of the Bible. Hello, friends, and welcome back to a new season on Timothy Talks, Season 4, Tough Bible Questions. The goal of this season is I'm going to be answering some of the toughest Bible questions that are out there. I'm going to delve into the most challenging, the toughest, even the weirdest Bible questions. And the team here at Timothy Talks, we are working hard always to improve the show. So make sure to listen to the little break segment that is going to be airing here in a few minutes just to learn how you can get your own tough Bible questions answered during this season. But I am so excited to be here. It's really exciting to be able to work through some of these tough questions so that we can have solid answers to defend our faith. Today's question, we're going to start off, we're going to be going through many, many different questions over the next few weeks. But today's question is, are dinosaurs in the Bible? Are they ever mentioned? Is there even room in the Bible for dinosaurs? Or are we as Christians stuck in the dilemma of having to choose between taking the Bible literally or believing that dinosaurs ever existed? Now, some of the answers that people give to this question. One answer is that God created dinosaur bones to test your faith. Have you ever heard something like that? Well, no, he didn't. That's not why there's dinosaur bones. It's not like God was making them just to test your faith because they didn't really exist, but he just put them into the fossil record so that your faith would have another objection that would have to work through. Any answer like that's ridiculous. Dinosaurs definitely existed. We can start out with that. God does not work that way by creating things just like that, just to test your faith and putting them into the fossil record for you. Another answer that some people give is that there's no room in the Bible for dinosaurs. It's impossible to believe in both, they say. Well, again, no, nothing in the Bible indicates that dinosaurs couldn't exist. And I'm going to be talking through how it's possible to believe in what we see in the fossil record, which is to say dinosaurs. It's possible to believe in them and also to believe in the Bible as a literal book that we can interpret literally. Now, a third answer that some people give to this question is that dinosaurs prove that the Bible shouldn't be interpreted literally. So they're okay with dinosaurs and they're even okay with the Bible. But they would say, because dinosaurs must be millions of years old, it's impossible to take the Bible literally and believe in a young earth. You have to interpret the Bible metaphorically, as giving us pictures, not really telling us in plain, simple language what it seems to be saying. So what do we do with an answer like this? Well, once again, I'm going to try to show you in the next few minutes that that is also not the answer. It is possible to believe in the Bible and to also believe in dinosaurs, to even believe in the Bible literally, and to believe in dinosaurs. But I'll explain that later if you have questions in your mind about that. And then there's one other answer to this question that some people give. Some people say dinosaurs are definitely in the Bible, no question about it. They actually argue that dinosaurs are described in the Bible and mentioned in the Bible. And actually, they have some pretty neat evidence that seems to be on their side. So is this the answer? Are dinosaurs definitely in the Bible? Well, in answer to that, I'd say maybe. But we can't say for sure. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take us through the biblical evidence about the history of the world and how dinosaurs could fit in there. Then we're going to take a specific look at some of the passages that some people look at to argue that dinosaurs actually are in the Bible. So I know that we just started the show, we're only a couple minutes into it, but I want you to take just a moment to listen to this important message so that you can learn how you can get your own tough Bible questions answered potentially on this podcast. Take just a moment to listen. I'll be right back. Now it's your turn. This season at Timothy Talks, the goal is to answer your tough Bible questions. So do you have a tough Bible question? If so, email it to timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. That's timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. Plus, every time you send a tough Bible question, you'll get a chance to win a Bible study resource of your choice so that you can understand the Bible even better. we might devote a whole podcast episode to answering your tough Bible question. Welcome back. So we've got this huge question on the plate right now. Are dinosaurs in the Bible? And it's sort of a twofold question. Can dinosaurs even fit into the framework that the Bible gives us of world history? But also, are dinosaurs mentioned or described in the Bible in some way? Let's just look at the evidence. So the Bible teaches that God created the world in 6 days. This is what we learn in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. 6 days, and if you take the Bible for what it says, there's 6 literal days. Now, we could talk more about this. We could even do a whole podcast episode. Who knows? Maybe sometime I'll do that, do a podcast episode on exactly what is meant by those 6 days. But if you take the Bible for what it says, not what people say when they have agendas, not what people say when they're trying to get other things in place, if you just a plain, simple reading of what the text actually says, it says that the world was created in 6 days. That is to say, 6 days that have a morning and an evening. So we've got to be talking about a rotation of the planets, such that there's a morning and an evening. If you take the Bible literally like this, in the way that it seems to be at a simple reading of what the text actually says without trying to put other things into the text, the Bible teaches that God created the world and everything in it somewhere around 6,000 years ago. Now, we don't want to stick to that date specifically. Could be, who knows, 6,500, 5,500, whatever. You get the point. It's about 6,000 when you go through, you work up the genealogies, you add them together, you come to the number of about 6,000 years. And we also know that death entered the world after Adam and Eve ate the fruit. So what this means then is that however we're going to date the world, and even dinosaurs, we have to understand that death came at a certain point in the process. Death enters the world after they eat the fruit. That means, in other words, that again, if we're taking the Bible as the Bible explains itself and as the Bible literally says, there couldn't be dead dinosaurs before the time of Adam and Eve because death didn't enter the world until after Adam and Eve. So, first thing that we see right here, pretty simple, pretty obvious, but I mean, it's a big thing that we have to admit if we're going to follow what the Bible says, is that Adam and Eve existed at the same time as dinosaurs. Dinosaurs existed at the same time as people. Now, you may have a huge issue with that. You may not agree with that. But this is what the Bible would indicate. This is what you're going to have to come to if you're going to take the Bible literally as what it says. And I'm going to make a quick point here, sort of going off topic a little bit. But as I'm answering these questions, I'm answering these questions as someone who's studying the Bible. I'm not answering these questions primarily as a scientist. Now, I'm not going against science, and there's lots of great scientists who've done some incredible research who back up everything that I'm saying. So what I'm saying is not unscientific. But at the same time, I'm giving this to you as we're starting with, our starting point is, here's what the Bible says, and I'm not delving as much into the scientific evidence for it, although I could. There's plenty of scientific evidence, oftentimes not mentioned, oftentimes sort of glossed over by the secular scientific establishment. But what I'm giving you, it's not from the scientific standpoint, but it is scientific still. Or there is evidence that could be put towards it, legitimate evidence. Anyways, that's sort of a sidetrack here. But all of this is to say that dinosaurs and humans exist at the same time. Amazing, I know, absolutely incredible. Fast forward in the book of Genesis, hundreds and hundreds of years later, and you come to the time of the flood. This is the time when the animals were brought into the ark. Noah, everyone's familiar with this story. Noah builds an ark. The animals come on two by two. Well, what does this mean if we believe in dinosaurs? Now, there's a couple options that we can do with this. One is, it's possible that the dinosaurs were already extinct by this time. There's nothing in the book of Genesis or in anything else in God's word that indicates that this couldn't have happened. It could be that already by the time of the ark, the creatures that we know of as dinosaurs are already extinct. And you think about it too, this is a possibility because sin has entered the world already when Adam and Eve eat the fruit, and the effects of sin begin immediately. And who knows how long it took before species began to go extinct, or to use biblical terminology, before kinds began to go extinct. Now, on the other hand, let's say that they weren't extinct by this time. If they weren't, then yes, dinosaurs would be on the ark. Now, at first glance, this sounds really hard to believe. How could there be Tyrannosaurus Rex on the ark? Wouldn't they eat all the other animals and so on and so forth? Well, this doesn't have to be a tough question because there don't have to be full-size dinosaurs. We could be talking about little baby dinosaurs. And this also, I said a moment ago, rather than using the word species, I said kind, because the word species is not used in the Bible. Instead, there's kinds. There are different kinds of animals. Now, the theory goes that within a kind, there is a genetic diversity that exists that allows that kind to differentiate itself. This is the whole way that breeding different sorts of animals works. How do we have so many different breeds of dogs? Well, there's a dog kind, and within that dog kind, there's sufficient genetic diversity that if you breed selectively within this kind, you can get a specific species to come out. You can get a specific breed of animal. And so what this means is that we don't have to represent every single species on the Ark of Noah. Instead, you simply need to represent a kind such that kind can differentiate itself into further species later on through the years. So, for example, Noah doesn't have to take every single breed of dog that exists in the world at the time of the flood. He only has to bring on a dog kind, a male and a female dog, and therefore, from that dog kind, there can be specialization that can occur. So similarly, when we come to dinosaurs, there could be kinds of dinosaurs. And if Noah brings on specifically the kinds of dinosaurs that will differentiate themselves into the breeds of dinosaurs or the species of dinosaurs that we see later on. So this takes care of the problem of how would you find enough room on the ark, how would you have enough food on the ark, etc., to actually have all of the different species represented. You don't have to represent all of them. You just have to have the kind represented. After the flood, evidence indicates that the world went through a sort of mini ice age that favored certain species. So we're moving on past the flood. Assuming then the dinosaurs could have been on the ark, we get past the flood and we come to this point where there is this mini ice age. And it favors certain species. Now I say this because when the climate changes, and the climate has changed several times throughout the history of the world, it's very obvious if you look back at historical records, you can see this. For example, even in the time of the Roman Empire, 1st, 2nd century AD, there was a warm period of time that then later the world moved out of that warm period to a colder climate during the Middle Ages. My point here is that a climactic change like this will favor certain species and it will not favor other species. And not being a scientist myself, I mean, who knows all of the different effects that this could have? But it's possible that this mini ice age, if there were dinosaurs at this time, may not have favored those dinosaurs. It makes life harder. And certainly you can think if the climate becomes colder, that does make life harder for certain species, for certain types of animals. Even for humans, that could make your life a whole lot harder. Some of the foods that you want to grow, all of a sudden you can't grow them because the climate is too cold. This is one possibility as to what could have happened to dinosaurs. Another is the fact of biomass. So let me talk a little bit about biomass. Biomass is the sort of the square footage, or the cubic footage, so to speak, of living matter. And biomass indicates that so sort of the theory is like this. The higher up the food chain a creature is, the fewer of them there are. Which is to say, if you have one lion, you have to have a whole lot more gazelle underneath that lion, because one lion is going to eat multiple gazelle. Similarly, every gazelle has to have a large amount of grass because a lot of grass turns into one gazelle as it eats it. So the higher up the chain you go and the more steps in the chain you go, the fewer there are. Well, dinosaurs would, by their very nature as being predators and as being large predators and violent predators that would eat even large animals like lions, they would literally be at the top of the food chain. So going based off of this understanding of biomass, a creature like a dinosaur at the very top of the food chain is very easy to be eliminated because all that has to happen is a change lower down. For example, let's assume, just for the sake of this example, that a dinosaur eats a lion. He eats multiple lions to stay alive. And lions eat gazelles, multiple gazelles to stay alive. And gazelles eat grass, lots of grass to stay alive. So what happens if there's less grass? Well, there's less gazelles, which means there's less lions, which means, of course, that there's less dinosaurs, because the dinosaurs suddenly have a diminished food source. I think you sort of get where this is going, that the biomass of a dinosaur is so large that it could indicate that being at the top of the food chain, it's more difficult to get that creature to stay alive. Another difficulty for dinosaurs would have been the fact that as predators, they may have been targeted by humans. It's not really, I mean, we don't have evidence of this per se, but it's possible that dinosaurs may have been targeted by humans. Anyways, I say all of this to say, it's possible that dinosaurs can fit into the biblical narrative of how we understand the Bible and how we understand world history if we take the Bible literally. It's a tough question, but the Bible doesn't preclude this. Now, at this point, depending on where you're coming from on this discussion, you might say, but isn't there so much evidence that dinosaurs existed millions and millions of years ago? To you, I would say, there's actually evidence that's tentative and shaky, and there's actually other theories on this evidence. So I'm not here to be able to work through all of the scientific evidence. We're dealing with tough Bible questions, not tough science questions, or even not how science and the Bible fit together. They are important. That is an important question. And there are some great groups that have done some phenomenal work on that. For example, Answers in Genesis. If you've never checked them out, go check them out. And they've got a lot of great scholarship on questions like this to actually show that science and the Bible are not diametrically opposed. But again, we're going to stick to the biblical evidence itself. So at this point, I want to point out two passages in the book of Job. These are two passages that are sometimes quoted to prove that dinosaurs are mentioned in the Bible. And Job is actually one of the earliest books of the Bible ever written. It was probably written right after the time of the flood. So if dinosaurs did survive the flood, okay, just assume maybe dinosaurs could have survived the flood, they probably would have existed in the time of the book of Job because it comes so shortly after the time of the flood. There's two passages here that I want to point out. Unfortunately, because time's limited, I'm not going to read through both of these passages, but I will tell you where they are so that you can read through them yourself. The first passage is Job chapter 40, verses 15 through 24. Job 40, 15 through 24. If you want to reference it later, check that out. But in Job 40, 15 through 24, we're introduced to a creature called Behemoth. You may have heard this word, behemoth. It's sort of, we don't really have a translation for it because we don't know what it was referring to. And the passage is really sort of difficult to understand, but there are a few things that we can take away from this passage. I mean, it describes this creature, describes behemoth, and it's not really clear what it's describing, but there are a few clues that it gives to us. And here's the few clues that you take away when you read this about the description of behemoth. First of all, behemoth eats grass like an ox. So this is not a voracious, fierce creature per se. It's not an animal that eats other animals, but it's an animal that eats grass like an ox. Another piece that we take away is that the tail of behemoth is compared with a cedar tree. Now here the translation is a little difficult. Some places describe the tail as a cedar tree. Some places describe that the tail of behemoth becomes straight like a cedar tree. It's hard to tell. But whatever it is, in some way, the tail is compared to a cedar tree. Then you have this fascinating phrase that behemoth is the first of the works of God. He is the first of the works of God, which is to say something like behemoth is the premier creation of God. So this is some sort of an impressive creature, whatever this is, that to be listed as the first of the works of God. Another thing is that behemoth spends his time in the reeds and marshes. And he rests in the shade of trees. So it's some sort of a water dwelling, like he's on the land, but he likes to spend time in wet, swampy areas. And yes, even rests in the shade of the trees. Another piece of evidence is that behemoth is not disturbed by raging water. Things that would be terrifying to us that we'd want to escape from, behemoth doesn't seem to really be concerned about raging water. And then the sixth thing, it's sort of implied by everything that's said here, it's implied that you can't capture behemoth. Behemoth is a creature that in some way is uncapturable. Now, that's sort of what we take away. And as you can tell from that evidence, it's sort of hard to tell what is behemoth. As a result, there have been several different ideas as to what behemoth is. And I'm going to list the three main possibilities as to what behemoth is. The first possibility is that behemoth is a hippopotamus. Some scholars believe that behemoth is a hippopotamus. And I think that this is, to be honest, I think this is pretty unlikely. I say it's unlikely because who would think to describe a hippopotamus as the first of the works of God. To me, yeah, hippopotamus, sort of impressive creature, but definitely not first place in creation. Again, would you really compare a hippopotamus's tail to a cedar tree? Now, sure, maybe the point is just that it's straight like a cedar tree. Okay, sure, but I can think of a lot of other things that I could compare a hippopotamus's tail to before I compare it to a cedar tree. So I think the hippopotamus is pretty much out the window. The behemoth in Job 40 doesn't seem to be a hippopotamus. Sometimes people view this as more of a metaphor, not an actual creature, but perhaps an allusion or a figure of speech for primordial chaos and power, or some grand creature, or the creatures in general, something like this. In other words, it's not a concrete animal per se, but it's more just a picture of something. Again, on this, I'm going to have to say that's not very convincing, because behemoth is described in specific terms, and behemoth is described in a setting where a lot of other specific things are being described. The book of Job is at the point where God is questioning Job, and it doesn't really make sense now for God to be pointing to these metaphorical ideas that don't actually have existence. So I don't think that this idea is a great description of behemoth. There is a third idea, and the third idea is that behemoth is a dinosaur. Now, I think that this is possible. I'm not going to stake everything on it, but I lean this way. That behemoth could be some sort of a plant-eating dinosaur that's in view right here. Again, a dinosaur, a plant-eating dinosaur, could fit all of these. Eats grass like an ox? Check. Tail compared to a cedar tree? Again, check. The first of the works of God? Yes. He spends his time in the reeds and marshes, rests in the shade of trees. Well, this may not be one of the largest dinosaurs, but there's plenty of dinosaurs that do things like this, at least if the picture that we have of dinosaurs is anything like correct. That they spend their time, some of them could spend their time in marshes and swamps, and some of them would rest in the shade of trees. Raging water doesn't disturb. Well, I assume if you're a dinosaur, a big rushing river isn't too scary, and you can't capture this beast. Well, I don't think a dinosaur is the easiest to capture. I say all this to say, behemoth, we don't really know, but I think that a dinosaur could be on the table. It's not impossible. We have one more passage, Job 41, 1 through 10, and here we're introduced to another creature called Leviathan. Again, if you want to look this passage up, it's Job 41, verses 1 through 10. And this is a creature that's mentioned several other times in the Bible, but it's most fully described in this chapter in Job. Here's what we learn about Leviathan from the chapter. Leviathan is a sea creature. Leviathan is not easily captured or killed, even with spears and harpoons. Leviathan is so terrifying that even the sight of him makes men terrified. And finally, no one is brave enough to attack Leviathan. So whatever this creature is, it's a terrifying, dangerous-seeming-to-be sea creature. And there's three possibilities, again, for what Leviathan is. First of all, some scholars believe that Leviathan is a crocodile. Again, I'm going to just look at this and I'm going to say it really doesn't persuade me. Because how do you say that Leviathan is a crocodile if Leviathan is not easily captured or killed, even with spears and harpoons, and no one's even brave enough to attack him? Very early on, we have pictures of Egyptians attacking crocodiles with spears and harpoons. A second possibility is, again, the allegorical or metaphorical example, that Leviathan is simply a picture of the untamed chaos of the seas. In a time in history when the seas would have been a dangerous place, people didn't have big ships, and so Leviathan stands for everything that the sea is to them, a terrifying, dangerous place. Again, possible, but I think unlikely. God is arguing with Job, and for him to refer to a creature that doesn't exist, to me it doesn't seem to advance the point of the argument very much. Third option is, again, the dinosaur option, that this could refer to an ocean dinosaur. And when I say ocean dinosaur, I don't necessarily mean a dinosaur per se, but some sort of an ancient sea creature, a sea monster, like we have the bones of and like we would commonly refer to as a dinosaur. Again, I think that this is the best option. I think that it works. I think it fits the evidence, because if you have some of these gigantic sea creatures that we would call dinosaurs today that are just terrifying to look at, if you've seen pictures, and most people have, They're the sort of thing that if you're a sailor and you see that, the very sight of that would make you terrified. If you're out in a boat on the ocean and you see something like that coming towards you, you would certainly not want to attack that. You would not even want to attack it if you had spears and harpoons. And I think that that is probably the best answer that we have to what Leviathan is. But again, I'm not going to stake everything on that. I'm not convinced about this, but I think it's a pretty good option. So that's sort of the evidence. Those are the two places that people go to say that dinosaurs exist in the Bible. And so let me summarize my answer for you. Is there room for dinosaurs in the Bible? Yes, absolutely. You can believe in dinosaurs and still believe in the Bible literally. On the other hand, a second question, are dinosaurs mentioned in the Bible? I would say probably, possibly, very good chance, or at least some sort of ancient creature that no longer exists. But we can't say this 100%. Still, it's possible that dinosaurs are mentioned in the Bible. I don't want to put it down because here's the reality. We don't know 100%. But the evidence indicates that it's very possible. There's so much more that we could say on this topic. I mean, I would love to be able to work through more of the scientific stuff, but time is limited. We're trying to deal with the biggest Bible question, so I hope that that was helpful for you. But as we end, I really want to challenge you with a quotation that I heard. And this was really, really puts our discussion of tough Bible questions in perspective. Mark Twain said this, "It ain't the parts of the Bible that I can't understand that bother me. It's the parts that I do understand." So I'm really glad that you tuned in to this tough Bible question. But my question for you now is, this is one of those tough Bible questions, but what about the easy Bible sections? What about the parts that are easy to understand about Jesus Christ, where we're called on to believe in Jesus Christ? You may be interested about the tough Bible questions, but what are you doing with the parts that you already understand? That, the gospel, the message of Jesus Christ, who is crucified, buried, and resurrected, and who's coming again, and who calls all men to repentance, this is the beating heart of the Bible. Think about that. Thank you for joining Timothy Talks as we answer tough Bible questions. I really want to extend an invitation to you to join me next week. I'm going to be answering the question, who are the Nephilim? This is, again, one of those really tough Bible questions. If you've not already, I want to invite you to subscribe so that you never miss an episode of this. And if you've enjoyed today's show, it would mean so much to me if you would share this episode with your family and friends. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.